ladder up. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 134 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this was going to be a happy podcast. This is, you know, we record this as the All-Star game is going on at about 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday night. But everything changed when 5 minutes before we started recording, breaking news, Jacob DeGrom experienced mild muscle soreness around his shoulder on Sunday.
Because of course he did.
He played catch on Monday and Tuesday without issue, but the Mets pushed back his simulated game to Thursday, quote, out of an abundance of caution.
If there's anything I love to have an abundance of, it's caution.
Oh, God. I know that, like,
Miles still through, but I don't know.
I know that mild muscle soreness should not, like, be that big of a deal or, like, set alarm bells off. But we're at the stage of, like, Jacob DeGrom hasn't, you know, pitched in a game in over a year and keeps getting hurt again. And it's at the point where it's, like, any minor thing is, like, DEFCON 1!
It was definitely also a stage in the David Wright never coming back to baseball.
I
just need him to come back to baseball so that he'll be back at baseball. That's all I want.
But it's like, I don't even know, like, if he ever does come back. I'm just going to be watching him, waiting for him to break again. Like, will I even be able to enjoy watching him pitch? Because the whole time I'll be holding my breath, seeing if he's wincing, seeing if he's holding his arm strange or so. It's like,
this was what it was like the whole time last year.
Yeah, it's going to be that again.
Like, Dacoma was the first one to report it, but obviously, like, all the beat reporters tweeted it almost at once. But then Dacoma followed it up with, this obviously pushes DeGrom's timeline back a bit. It's now difficult to see him returning for the upcoming Yankees series. If the Mets decide, given this new information, that he needs another rehab start after the Sim game, his return wouldn't happen until August. Now, again, this is all assuming no pain, like that this pain doesn't get any worse or doesn't recur, happen again. And when you get into a point where he's throwing his very first game of the season in August, like at that point, how much can he contribute to this stretch run? Like,
he'll
any
be
Jacob
so
DeGrom,
rested for the World Series.
Sure. Maybe he'll like, yeah, maybe he's mid-season form for the World Series. You know?
Any like millisecond of Jacob DeGrom pitching is better than not that millisecond.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Even if he goes like 4 innings per start.
Would be super if it was more than a millisecond, though. Just like if I'm putting that out there.
Can we get greedy and ask for more than 1 millisecond?
Yeah, more than 1 millisecond.
Multiple.
Jacob DeGrom.
Several. Yeah.
Several milliseconds. Now I'm kind of like, his return won't happen until August. How about the National Series? Hey.
Timers Day, August 27th.
Oh my God. I hope it's not that far. Ugh.
Please.
If it's that far, then we're talking about like bad things, very bad things.
This is also true.
And I'm trying not to be like too much doom about this, but what would
it's
you
hard
two
not
say
to be at this point?
It's hard. It's hard. I'm sending some feelers out for you two. What is the likelihood he does this Sim game on Thursday? Like what percent confident are you that he does it?
I'm 0% confident he returns at all this season at this point.
Oh my God. That's more
doom
than me.
I would say there's probably a 70% chance he makes that Sim game.
Yeah. That's about what I put it at. I'd probably be closer to 60% that he does the Sim game on Thursday. Because well, he threw.
Yeah, he threw Monday and Tuesday. So
now, am I hanging my hat on anything coming after that? I am not.
No.
That's the thing, is that, and, you know, objectively, is this sort of news likely to lead to season ending, whatever? Probably not. But it's also hard to, like, break out of that mindset. Like,
yeah,
it feels like there's a lot of reasons to think it is this bad, and that is a correct statement. But also, there's a lot of reasons that it is probably not that bad.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm willing to entertain the possibility.
Out of an abundance of caution. Jesus Christ.
But it's just, I'm so sad that his best two seasons were on bad teams.
Yep. And now the Mets are finally good.
Do not talk about Jacob DeGrom in the past tense, Linda. He's not dead yet.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try not to, but still.
Mostly dead.
I think bare minimum, it's hard to see the sim game being his last thing. Because, like, even if it goes fine, even if it's, like, the best case scenario, which is at this point, he throws the sim game without soreness or pain. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to see them not giving him another rehab start after that, since he was previously experiencing pain.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Jake's going to be like, I'm fine. It's really fine. Let's go. But who knows? I mean, from DeGrom's perspective, it's getting to the point where if it's that much further delayed, like it will be hard for him to put forth a body of work to opt out of the contract and get his biggest payday he can, which he deserves, like he should do. Like we talked about this way back when he initially said his intention was to opt out. Like we on this podcast are not against Jacob DeGrom opting out. I mean, like we would love for him to stay, of course, but he should get his due, but it's going to be harder and harder for him to do that if he doesn't pitch this season or pitches very little this season.
Yeah, it's going to be, he has another opt out next year, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
So he can wait a year, but he's not getting any younger.
Yeah.
So
no, for sure. That's,
we'll see what happens, but
who comes like, back, him or Lucchese first?
I don't know. It's a good question because
Lucchese was shooting for August too.
Yeah. Was shooting for like around that same timeline. So who knows? Remember when we were like saying who comes back first, DeGrom or Scherzer? And that was like a serious debate.
Yeah.
And Scherzer's been back
for
like a week or two now. Oh man.
And now anyway. We have to talk about Lucchese.
Yeah, Jesus. David Peterson in the rotation forever. Here we are.
Well, and can we say about the Mets dumping this right as the All-Star game is starting?
Of course they did. And we have been praising them for how they've handled like injury news and injury updates this year compared to the past. But this reeks of like old Mets shit. This is like exactly the type of stuff the previous regime would have done.
Well, wasn't the game supposed to be today?
Yeah, I think it really is just bad timing of it. But like to wait until after the All-Star game literally starts, like the telecast of the All-Star game, I think that they probably may have known this earlier in the day. I mean, they knew he was sore and didn't say anything.
Yeah, they knew Sunday.
They knew Sunday. But like, I'm not sure that they knew that they weren't going to do the sim game today until maybe today. But they probably knew earlier in the day and waited until after the All-Star game broadcast started. And we're like, by the way, while everyone's distracted, Jacob DeGrom's shoulder hurts again.
Well, the Blue Jays did the same thing when they fired Charlie Montoyo. It was the same day the NHL free agency opened up. So, of course, Canada was distracted by hockey.
Yeah. I didn't think of that, but that's true, too.
Yeah, I imagine it like you're trying to Canada. Sneak into a house with a guard dog, and so you throw it a steak. Like you throw Canada some hockey and just in the back entrance.
That's exactly it.
Oop, Jeff McNeil's first at bat is happening.
Go, Jeffy. Yay.
By the way.
I hope his baby is far away from lots of other people.
I doubt it. Oh,
I doubt it too.
In very Mets fashion, he just got hit by the pitch.
Yes!
The most Mets at bats ever happened. Got hit by a pitch by Sandy Alcantara.
Please cut to Buck Showalter at home.
Cut to Buck Showalter. Where's the Buck cam?
We need the Buck cam.
See, this is where national broadcasts fall short. They couldn't possibly know. Except that anyone who is worth anything should know to just always have a camera on Buck Showalter at all times.
Yeah, like just he should be case. Like Zooming or something during the game or live streaming during the game.
Yeah. So anyway, I interrupted to talk about Jeff McNeil's at bat, which turned out to be very brief. As the National League is up 2-0 in the bottom of the second with McNeil on first base and two outs. We originally, before the DeGrom news hit, now we're back to our regularly scheduled programming, folks. We were going to do first half reflections, which we will still do. I figured we would first talk about, you know, this is not exactly the same as our personal all-stars that we did last week. This is more of our first half MVPs and first half LVPs. And then we're going to talk about like Fangraphs odds and the chances that the Mets like do various stages of the playoffs, and whether we think that like whether we would take the over or the under on that. And then we're going to talk about needs at the deadline. So as far as first half reflections and MVPs and LVPs, Linda, I'm going to put you on the spot first. If you pick one MVP and one LVP, like who you think was the most valuable player to the Mets in the first half and who is the least valuable player to the Mets.
MVP for sure for me is Edwin Diaz. That bullpen is bordering garbage as it is. Without him, it would be hot garbage.
Yeah, I mean, it's an average to maybe slightly below average bullpen. The rest of it, the non-Diaz part. But I think it's just like, you know, it's not good enough for a contending team, and we'll get to that. But no. Yes.
No, it definitely isn't. So,
but Edwin Diaz has made all the difference.
Yeah. And just to, I mean, he's like doing it in stupid fashion too. Like, it's just, you know, seeing him at the top of his game is just incredible. Especially the Braves series, the opener when it was Scherzer and then him, like both of them said, we're not losing today. Like they took the mound or you guys have no chance, and the Braves didn't. And that was probably a big statement.
I don't think I've seen this many like uncompetitive at bats ever before. Just like the sheer percentage of like absolute blowout, you know, three pitch strikeouts. Like it's just the, like these guys who walk away shaking their heads, every single one of them.
Making very good major league hitters look completely stupid up there.
Like, I would love to find out, and I realize this is something I am technically capable of doing, but much too lazy. You know, what I'd love to find out is what the percentage of three pitch strikeouts, because I feel like he does it like more than half of his strikeouts.
Yeah.
Where they legit have no shot at all either. Yeah. Like they can swing all they want and
they can't even make contact.
Yeah, they're nowhere close.
And they often don't even do that. Like I feel like there are guys up there who are just like waiting for it to be over.
Yeah, like, and like go back.
And I don't say that, you know, there's no judgment in that. That's what I would do.
It's scary. All right. LVP. As much as it pains me to say it, no, I won't go that far. I will never go that far. I mean, I thought it, but I won't say it. I'll say Dominic Smith instead.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah, no, like, that's.
I mean, he's had more. If not for the time in the minors, he's had more at bats.
He has, and he was given the opportunity to in the beginning of the year. Like once Cano was gone, and even when Cano was there, Dom was still getting at bats.
Yeah,
and I mean, I said this in Slack the other day because he hasn't hit a home run in a over a year, which is unacceptable from a first baseman. Like, what if he just legit doesn't have the power anymore?
Yeah, no, he doesn't look like a major league player.
No.
And he hasn't really all year.
No, like, what? I mean, we'll talk about uncompetitive at bats, but this is against everybody. This isn't against just Edwin. Like, he had a couple, he had, what, that 4-for-4 game. And then, like, when he first came back up after the minors, like, he had a couple good games. But now it's just right back to just being completely uncompetitive and overmatched at the plate. Like, I don't know if he's just lost or if 2019 was a fluke with the juice ball but it's also on the Mets for this being their plan for the DH going into the season. So it's not totally his fault, but at the same time, he was given an opportunity and he didn't seize it.
Yeah. 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 All right, Maggie Wiggin, who is your MVP and LVP of the first half?
Okay, my MVP is Francisco Lindor, who has just been really rock solid. He has had a couple of slumps with the bat, you know, throughout the year, but also, especially in the run environment of this season, like, he is well above a league average hitter, and he's doing that with absolutely incredible defense. Like, just not flashy defense at all. And I think that is what kind of makes it go very under the radar. But like, he gets to everything. There is not a ball hit to that side of the infield that I am even nervous about. Like, it just, and even the ones that do where I'm like, oh God, he gets those. Like, he just gets to everything. And that is so fantastic to anchor that infield, to boost the pitchers big time. And then he's just taking on that real, on-field leadership sort of role and like always going in and talking with this guy or that. And that's, you know, I just love to see that from him.
Him and Cure may have a certain kind of magic together up the middle, too.
I could watch them turn double plays all day long.
Yeah,
well, you used to have Daniel Murphy and Wilmer Flores.
Yeah, right. And Cure may, I mean, also just, like, is not human. I think that the stuff that he does, like, I don't understand that. But, like, and again, there's not so much of the, like, fireworks with Lindor, but just, he's just always there. And that is very awesome. So, Francisco Lindor, A+. And then my LVP was also going to be Dom Smith.
Oh,
I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction and say, actually, Tomas Nito, who really has had an extended chance to get in a rhythm and has not done it. And his offense is really, really rough, like as bad really as James McCann's ever has been. And his defense has been good, but not like can carry a second. Well, no, I guess it's not about carrying a second pitcher anymore. It's about carrying a pitcher. It's just really disappointing because I had hoped that given a little time that he might like put something together and, you know, make things a little easier for the Mets at catcher for the season. And it just has not happened at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's still good behind the plate, but you're getting nothing out of the catcher position offensively. Yeah.
He is fine. He is fine behind the plate. Like he is a good defensive catcher, but like there's only so far that good defensive catcher can take you.
I think you can like swallow that from your catcher, like absolutely no production if, you know, the Mets get another bat at the deadline and if the DH doesn't suck, right, exactly. If the Mets have a solid 1-8 and then the catcher is basically like a pitcher hitting better than that, but like not by much, then then it's fine as long as the defense is there, which for the most part, it has been for Nito. It's just that like now they have black holes at two positions in the lineup, and that's not as sustainable for a team that's trying to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it in the past, like, couple series when Marte and McNeil was out. That lineup craters real fast.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, you just can't have that. Like we said, if they want to go far, you can't have multiple black holes in the lineup where you know you're not scoring until at least two more innings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all we want.
My MVP, since obviously there's kind of an obvious like third player here to mention, so I will take him. My MVP is Pete Alonso.
Yay!
Yay,
so that's Pete. Always better.
He's been, you know, he hasn't been the Mets' most consistent hitter, but he's been the Mets' best hitter. Like, let's be real about it. He's been the Mets' best hitter. He is leading the league in RBIs. Like, I don't know how much more you can ask of him. He's had just about as monster of a season as you can have.
He broke the Mets' record for first half RBIs.
He sure did. He sure did. And he and Lindor have been breaking records for teammate RBIs. Pete Alonso's just been everything that the Mets could have asked for and more. And, you know, he's been, we've talked about this over the past like couple of years, but his defense at first has improved a great deal. And that has been true again this year. He's been solid defensively. He even made that fantastic play during the Cubs series, which was like, probably the best play I've seen Pete Alonso make at first base. Just the like football style, like over the shoulder wide receiver catch, like really, really nice play. Not easy at all to make that play. And so, you know, just Pete Alonso is like, you know, one of the faces of the team, and he's been the Mets' best hitter, period. I will give, because I feel like he should be mentioned in this segment, I will give an honorable MVP mention to Brandon Nimmo, who I think has been indispensable to the Mets' success this season. And the main reason being that he has, knock on all the wood, been healthy. And that's been the biggest difference. You know, if Pete Alonso has been the Mets' best hitter, and I think it's hard to argue otherwise, Brandon Nimmo has been the Mets' most consistent hitter this season. Nimmo, I mean, not to say he's never slumped, he slumps sometimes, but Brandon Nimmo is not a player that is prone to prolonged slumps the way that Pete Alonso can be, and the way that many sluggers of Pete Alonso's ilk are. They just like swing really hard and miss when they're off, whereas Brandon Nimmo is not that type of player. He
walks his way out of a slump.
Exactly. Yeah. Even when he's not making solid contact, he's always working counts. He's always taking his walks. And you know, all those Pete Alonso RBIs that he's racking up, how many of those are Brandon Nimmo crossing the plate? A fair number of them. He leads the team in runs scored, I believe. I think he deserves an honorable mention here. So that is my MVP, is Pete Alonso, with an honorable mention to Brandon Nimmo. My LVP, I was also going to go with Dominic Smith. I think when it comes to like, when it comes to expectations minus reality, I think that he is pretty much the consensus LVP of the first half, sadly. Mm-hmm. But instead, since he's been talked about already, I will go with Robinson Cano as my LVP.
Well, yeah. Of
the first half. He was cut. He was so bad. And it was the right decision to do so. And now he's on the Atlanta Braves and played against the Mets and got a couple hits against them. Luckily, none of them like the back-breaking hit that we were waiting for.
That was after the Padres cut him. So he's been cut twice so far.
Yeah, he's been cut twice. I know he still gets his singles and he's been doing that for the Braves, and it's not that his promotion to the Braves, even though the timing of it was clearly trolling, it's not like it was without merit. He was hitting .333 in AAA or something like that, but it's all singles. He's just like pulling the ball and like doing seeing eye singles. Basically, that's all he can do now. He's completely devoid of power at this point. Like, he's just a shell of the legendary player that he was. And for the Mets, he didn't do anything. And, you know, I'm never one to use the salary against them, especially in the Steve Cohen era, because it really doesn't matter anymore. But, you know, he was supposed to be, I don't think that the Mets were counting on him to be like, you know, Pete Alonso level contributor here, but you know, he was considered an important part of this team heading into the season. He was, he batted. Where did he bat on opening day in the lineup? It was like fifth
something.
So like, you know, that was what the Mets were thinking, that he was going to be like, at least, you know, like maybe what Eduardo Escobar has done. Kind of. I think that the Mets were at least hoping for something like that, where he was playable, and he was just basically like unrosterable to the point where they chose not to roster him.
And he's no longer rostered. And well, others have made the same choice.
Like, the Mets made a whole team out of DHs and now don't have a DH.
Yep. All the DH as a position, as a collective position, has been the biggest LVP of this season.
I see. Yes. I want to feel vindicated for a second, because everybody's like, oh, the Mets will benefit the most from this because they have a team full of DHs, and look at what happened.
We had a team full of DHs like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing that the Mets always do, is everything 3 years late.
Yep.
I suppose in this case, it was 3 years early. So congratulations, Mets. You still suck at DH.
Yep. That said, even though DH is a huge problem, catcher's been a huge problem. The bullpen's been a problem. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll get to addressing those holes.
Can I give an honorary as well?
Yes, go for it.
I'm sorry, Allison. Seth Lugo.
Yeah, oh, he's been pretty bad.
Man, I consider Seth Lugo, too.
Real bad. Real, and like, I still sort of hope he puts it together, but I totally am not expecting that to happen. So just sort of sucks.
Yeah, he might be cooked. We'll see. It's been especially lately. Like,
he's thrown 100 million pitches for the New York Mets.
Yes.
It would not be surprising to me if that was just about all he had left.
Okay. Yep.
The Mets have a rotation of, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, the Mets have a rotation of sixth, seventh inning guys that they're trying to make eighth inning guys, which is why they need eighth inning guys, which we will get to.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey folks, check your ticket. Somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery. Why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to addressing those gaps that we've talked about, the Mets are still, despite those flaws, a very good baseball team.
Yeah, the Mets are good.
Mets are good. They are a good baseball team. They are 23 games over 500. How many games over 500 are they? A lot. And it's the high watermark for the season too. Like, they have the best, they have the best record that they have had at any point in the season, and the best record that they've had at this point since 2006. They are a good baseball team. So I figured it would be a good time to look at as we stand at the halfway point of the season, look at the FanGraphs odds for playoff odds for the Mets, and see if we on the podcast would go over under on each of these numbers.
Is this sponsored by DraftKings?
Sponsored by DraftKings. No, it's not. Please no one bet on this.
It was a joke.
Don't
it was a
bet
joke,
on sports. It's, that's a terrible way to spend your money.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although,
did you see what Tony Clark said today?
No. About sports betting?
Yeah. Somebody asked him if he was concerned about how prevalent sports betting is, or if he's concerned about how it's going since the Nationals added it to their stadium and stuff. And he was like, I'm not concerned about the future. I'm concerned about it now.
Yeah. He's not lying.
It's not great.
No, Like, yeah, it's already here, but the Nationals have a betting place in the stadium.
Yep, they do. Anyway, this is not a sports betting exercise.
No, this is a
fun thought exercise. But currently, these are the odds by Fangraphs for each of these things. So the first thing is the odds that the Mets make the playoffs, like at all. Fangraphs currently has that at 99.5%. So do we take the over or the under? There's not much over territory there. I guess in this case, we can say, like, do we agree that it's a near guarantee or are we less certain than that? Linda, you go first.
I would say yes, because they're at least, even if something kind of, if the Braves pass them, they're still in pretty good shape for the wild card.
Yeah.
So I think either way, they're probably in.
Maggie, do you agree?
I think Mets fans' entire existence occurs in the space between 99 and 0.5%. I feel like there's just that, like, that black hole where Mets fans go to die. I think that's probably about right. If anyone could screw it up, it's probably the Mets. But also, like, if this was the playoff formula in 2007, 2008, the Mets make it very easily, and then anything is possible. Now, it would be hella disappointing after all that has come so far this season to not come out with the division. I really want the division, but, like, yes, I think 99.5%, that 0.5 is just about where I'm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I am with you both. I think that, you know, there's even with this DeGrom doom, even with the feelings of, like, will the Braves ever lose another goddamn game ever again? This is so annoying.
Oh, my God, I hate it.
The Mets are a playoff team, period. Like, the chances that they don't make the playoffs are very minuscule now, obviously.
0.5%.
0.5%. And catastrophe has struck the Mets many times in our lifetimes. But I think it would have to be something biblical.
If we have to beat those odds, it could be the Mets.
Yes. But
we
would
do believe in you, Mets.
It would take a biblical event for the Mets not to make the playoffs. So I think 99.5% is about right. Okay. Maggie brought up the division. So the Fangraphs currently has the chances that the Mets win the division at 63.8%. Are we more confident than that or less confident than that? Linda.
I mean, they do have the more favorable schedule coming down the stretch, but I'm always going to be a pessimistic Mets fan, so I'm going to take the under.
Maggie, what are you taking?
Over,
under, or just about right on that, those odds?
Honestly, I would say just about right. You know, I think the Mets are... I think the teams are very, very evenly matched in a lot of ways. And so I would almost just, like, give the tiebreaker to the team that already is in first place. So, yeah, I would say about that.
Yeah.
In the, like, 60% range.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm going with Fangraphs is about right on this one. The Mets are currently leading, which puts them above 50-50. Odds, but it's not by a lot. It's by 2.5 games. Now, like Linda said, the Mets have the easier schedule, so that does also give them a little bit of a bump above 50-50 here. And I would have said Jacob DeGrom is coming back, so that helps too. But now I feel like I was prepared to go the over on this until we got the DeGrom news. And now I'm kind of like holding steady at 63.8, because now I'm like, well, you know, it's status quo. Like, the roster is what it is. Like, you know, obviously I think that they are going to improve in trade, but so are the Braves. Like, I'm not pretending the Braves are standing pat at the deadline. They are going to also improve. So, but the Mets had the ace in the hole in Jacob DeGrom. There was no way that the Braves were going to be able to make that level of improvement to their roster. So I was like, you know, I was prepared to go to the over on this one, but now that I'm scared about DeGrom again, mm-hmm. I'm going with that's about right.
I mean, it's going to come down to their head-to-head matchups, because yep. They still have so many games left.
Absolutely. And the Mets... Heading into the break, the Mets had a good showing against the Braves, took 2 out of 3.
I mean, if you buy into momentum, they got it.
Yeah.
So And if you don't buy into momentum, then not relevant.
Yeah.
So, average
I would just say it was in Atlanta too, which
it was in Atlanta.
Yes. Which, yes, given the Brumettes of the past, that could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
It could have, but it did not, luckily.
Maybe that died with Turner Field.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I hated
so
that
too.
Place. So the next odds that we've got here are the odds that the Mets get a bye in the first round of the playoffs, meaning that they're either the one seed or the two seed, meaning they either have the first or second best record in the National League. Those odds are, according to Fangraphs, 62.6%, which makes sense relative to the other odds, because if you think about it, like, if they have the bye, they probably won the division, because, like, otherwise the Braves have a better record than them. And the Dodgers are likely to have a better record than them at this point, because the Dodgers currently have a better record than them. So it makes sense that the division odds and the bye in the first round odds are close to each other. They're not identical, yeah, because obviously, yeah, you know, there's that, like, weird 1% in there where they, like,
I have trouble thinking that the NL Central team will be better than the Mets, but it's, yeah, not impossible.
You know, that's where that 1% difference,
yeah,
comes from.
That's the scenario there, where just, like, the Cards go on a run or whatever, and the Braves eke out over the Mets, and yeah.
Yeah. So, what do we think of that, Linda? 62.6%.
See, I'm a little more confident in that than I am with, because if they win the division, the Padres are playing horribly right now, but
yes,
the Dodgers are in a much tougher division.
Yeah.
So the chances of them, like, they have a better chance of, the Mets are in a good division too. I don't know. The Phillies have been hot and cold. The Nationals are just an embarrassment.
Nationals are a disgrace, yes.
And the West doesn't have any team like that. Like, the Diamondbacks got a little better.
The Diamondbacks
better.
Were that, but yeah, they're but much then, better now.
Yeah, but then they started playing a lot better. So I think the Dodgers have a better chance at losing more than the Mets, just based on the division they're in. So I'm going to take the over on that.
Fair enough. How about you, Maggie, over or under?
I would say it seems about right to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. About right.
Odds of winning up on that one.
Odds of winning the division about the same. To me, if they don't win the division, they don't have the second best record. I think that... Yeah. I'm less confident. I am more confident in the Dodgers than Linda is.
I would say I'm 100% confident that those, 99% confident that those will overlap completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we have the final set of odds, which is that the odds that the Mets win the World Series. Fangraphs has those odds at 14.7%, which, by the way, for reference, the Braves' odds of winning the World Series are like 12 point something percent. I don't remember the exact, but so the Mets have a 14.7% chance. And I'm going to look up what the Dodgers are, because I'm curious, like, what's
I'll say, I would take that chance. Like, yes, right now. Okay. A+. I agree to accept that percentage chance of the Mets winning. That sounds very nice.
The Dodgers' chances of winning the World Series are 16.4%, and they have the highest chance of, like, anybody, not just in the National League, in baseball. The Mets actually have the second best odds besides that. So the Dodgers have a 16.4% chance. The Mets have a 14.4% chance. And then the next highest is the Yankees at 14.2%. So almost the same odds as the Mets. So... Ooh.
Outside of 2016, when the Mets make the playoffs, they usually, like, make the most of it. They usually go pretty far whenever they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever been eliminated in the NLDS. So I would probably, those odds probably sound about right. They have they'll go far, but I don't know if I would say winning the World Series But it also depends on what moves they make. It's hard to judge.
It is hard to judge. Right now, I mean, this is all based on how the teams are right now, obviously.
And
I think it's based on like strength of like these other things about like winning the division, like the projected like standings, like they're based on like strength of schedule and the current rosters and all that stuff.
Yeah. So we don't know what improvements I'll make. We still don't know what's going on with Jake. So I'll say it's about right.
How about you, Maggie?
I feel like in my heart, I think it's a little bit lower, but that's also because when you set this up and I took a look at it, I was like very pleasantly surprised and like, I don't trust that feeling.
Yeah.
So that's my feeling. Just like on pure gut, I'm saying 10%.
I'm going the under on the 14.7 of the World Series. Not because I don't think that the Mets are capable of it. I don't know. Like, I look at their potential matchups and like if they make it to the World Series, I feel pretty good about their ability to make it to the World Series, but I look at the potential teams they will face in the World Series and I just don't feel like they got their asses kicked by the Astros twice.
Yeah, if they face the Astros, it's done.
Yes, like, they're done. But that same thing happened with the Cubs.
That's true.
But that's what I tell myself. It's just the Astros are the 2015 Cubs.
You're right. You're right.
It's possible.
It is possible.
Hey, you get in. Anything's possible.
And, you know, the Mets have not faced the Yankees yet in the regular season, and we'll see what happens there. But I just like, I don't feel good about that either. And I just like, yeah. Oh my God, I can't, my heart cannot deal with a Subway Series. I can't do it.
No.
I'm too old for it. I'm not, you know, I could have a stroke or something. It's not good.
I don't have the cholesterol to be out here.
No, I don't either.
No. All right. So that's for everyone's information. Those are the current FanGraphs odds. And I think that for the most part, they're pretty spot on. But in order to reach the promised land of the playoffs and potentially a World Series, the Mets are going to need to improve their team. As we mentioned, they have very specific and fixable flaws that they can get some.
Let me count the ways.
Yep. So I've listed in my show notes some potential specific targets for the Mets at the deadline. We've been talking for weeks now about like their needs. Their needs are fairly obvious. They need another bat and they need probably two bullpen arms. They need at least one, if not two bullpen arms. And those are like, you know, that's like the minimum of what they need to do. But this week we can talk about some specific targets. I kind of went from like, I don't know, like most obvious fit to least obvious fit, or like, you know, guys that have been talked about the most. Starting with Wilson Contreras, just because he's a catcher in addition to being the potential DH bat that the Mets need. He can also catch, and the Mets are currently short one catcher in James McCann, still being injured for a second time. So that would push like Patrick Mazika off the roster entirely and would push, you know, Tomas Nido into, I wouldn't say necessarily say a backup role, because I think Contreras would DH a lot, but you know, at least like a timeshare situation at catcher. That said, the reason why I don't think it's necessarily likely that the Mets will acquire Contreras, even though it's a very good like fit for them, is because I think that he would cost more than the Mets are willing to trade at this point, because the Mets have expressed some unwillingness to part with top prospects, Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty specifically, understandably so, because their farm is very top heavy and they can't really afford to like keep emptying it out at that high level. But who knows? Maybe they will. So that's kind of what I thought about this. Sarah Sanchez and I actually talked about this on Cup of Cubby Blue this week, so you should check that out. But
I mean, I think if the Mets are not willing to shell out what it's going to cost for Wilson Contreras, then like, what are you doing? Like, it was just not to say that Contreras is or should be cheap by any means, but like, you know, unless they're going around asking for something really outlandish, I mean, that's probably one of the better upgrades you're going to find. And the Mets should just do that, you know, yeah. or Josh Bell or like whatever, you know, but the, like, I would really hope that if it didn't come together, it would be more about like a mismatch of of needs, which is where I think they'll be undone by on the Juan Soto situation. But like, I don't know. Please do not turn around, Mets, and tell me that Wilson Contreras was too expensive to win the World Series. Like, come on.
I know, but I think that that might end up coming to pass. And I think that Contreras is going to be more expensive in trade than Josh Bell or Trey Mancini, to be perfectly honest, because he catches.
Yes, and that's fair.
That's such a rarity. Think about, like, I am hard pressed to remember the last time a catcher like moved mid-season, like a starting catcher. Like, it's hard to think of.
Was there Realmuto?
Was he traded mid-season?
I thought he was. Oh no, what's his name? Wilson Ramos. The Phillies traded for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the Mets signed him.
Yeah, that's true. And Contreras is a better player than Wilson Ramos was, even then.
Yeah.
And I just think that because of his ability to play catcher and the fact that he's like one of the few good hitting catchers left in the league,
why you don't trade too many catchers, because in general, you're just not going to be moving the needle that much. But he is the exception where you do move the needle.
Right. And he's a 3-time All-Star. Like, and there is, I mean, I'm not saying that this will necessarily factor into the Cubs front office plans, because Lord knows that the Cubs front office has like fully committed to like tearing out the hearts of Cubs fans. But he is, unlike Josh Bell, for example, Wilson Contreras is a franchise player for the Cubs. Like, he, you know, he's been with the Cubs his entire career. You know, this is like a Wilmer Flores crying in the club. By crying in the club, I mean crying on the field situation. Like, he's been with the Cubs since he was 16. And so this is a franchise catcher, 3-time All-Star. Like, this is not, he's by far, I think, as far as like, you know, DH bats that fit the Mets, he is the most expensive one, besides literally Juan Soto, which we'll get to in a minute. But like, that's he's the high end of the market
here. But like, what if you package him with like David Robertson?
So David Robertson, excellent transition.
Yeah.
Robertson.
See what I did there?
Is the next player on the list here who is also on the Cubs. And he is, you know, a potential fit for the Mets like setup role. I think that he by himself without Contreras would not be very expensive to acquire. Like a lot of these relievers, you know, the relievers are, you know, somewhat fungible and not as expensive to acquire. So I could see that as more of a, like, more feasible for the Mets, because they wouldn't have to part with like Beatty or Alvarez, but they could, in order to like, you know, sweeten the pot, get both players, and then maybe they'd have to part with like a Beatty or Alvarez, but they get both those players and they fill both their needs.
Go get both of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's an obvious fit for the Mets would be a Contreras Robertson package. Who knows if it comes together, but that would instantly upgrade the Mets in a big way.
Hire Allison for the front office.
Yeah.
He never gets drunk in White Plains.
Yeah. But I think, I don't think the Cubs are going to give away Contreras for free. He's a very good player.
What if we asked nicely?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what if we said, please, how could they say
Pretty
no?
Please. but if that like sort of package deal does not come together, there are alternative plans where they could look to fill their bat hole and bullpen hole separately. The Tigers have surplus bullpen arms, to deal. Andrew Chafin is one of them. Gregory Soto is another one. Andrew Chafin is someone who the Mets should have signed in the offseason, but then they might literally trade for Andrew Chafin instead, which fine, whatever. I can let bygones be bygones on that front if he ends up on the Mets. So, you know, those are two arms that could potentially be dealt to the Mets. The Tigers obviously are bad, and they could use some prospects, because I think that their farm system is not very well regarded.
They're bad, top to bottom.
So, and then alternatives to the DH bat, neither of these guys are obviously catchers. That's the bonus that Contreras provides, but they do fill that DH spot and would mean less Dominic Smith at bats. We've got Trey Mancini of the Orioles, who's been a favorite target of many at Amazing Avenue, including me, for Birdland reasons. He's a perfect fit for the roster. He's a great guy. He's a really fun player to root for. I would be so happy if the Mets got Trey Mancini. But the complicating factor is that the Orioles, the Baltimore Orioles, I repeat, the Baltimore Orioles find themselves in the AL wildcard race at this time. They are like 2.5 games back of the third wildcard slot at an even 500 for the season, which I think absolutely no one expected at this stage. They had to do like a 10 game winning streak to get that to happen, but they're playing good baseball right now. And so they might decide that they don't want to trade Trey Mancini anymore. We shall see. I don't know. I don't know what the Orioles front office is thinking here. I think that you know, they hired a bunch of Astros guys who are, you know, full blown like Moneyball tank philosophy. And I don't know if they think that like it's worth it, like to go for it when they are clearly not, they clearly are competing against these big behemoth teams. And like, is it worth it to really just get bounced in the first round and then you let Trey Mancini walk for nothing? I don't know.
Probably the next couple of weeks at the All-Star break will probably tell them. If the Orioles start losing again, the decision will be made for them.
Yeah, I think Mancini is very up in the air. I think that like of these guys that we're talking about, like he's the only one who their decision to deal him will be based on how they play for the next 2 weeks. The other guys are gone, regardless of how the team does that they play for. That brings us to Josh Bell, who we talked about a little bit. He's also a good fit at DH, and he's a switch hitter, which is really valuable. And he's having a damn good season for the Washington Nationals, just about the only one besides Juan Soto. I mean, we can throw an honorable mention to Nelson Cruz as well, who only DHs, literally cannot play the field, whereas Josh Bell can at least play first base a little bit. And would basically replace Dominic Smith on the roster. I imagine if Josh Bell ends up on the Mets, that Dominic Smith's roster would not be long for the roster.
Well, I think that goes for a lot of these
for
guys.
Anybody. Yes.
that is who they are shopping for.
Yeah, they're shopping for a literal upgrade on Dominic Smith.
I would like to aim a little higher than Nelson Cruz, though.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz. I mean, he DHs. He has a long track record of being good at DHing. This season has not been his best season, and he is old and potentially washed. But that said, he got off to a really, really slow start and has played a lot better since then, but it makes his overall numbers still look pretty poor. But he's not been like great. He's still like him picking it up has just been like him being okay instead of him being horrible. I think that the Mets can get a better hitter than that. And Josh Bell would be a better hitter than that.
Yeah.
The question is that, whereas the question with Trey Mancini is, or are the Orioles willing to deal him given their position in the standings? The question with Josh Bell is, are the Nationals willing to deal him in division, or will that, like, I think they're willing to.
Idiots to not, this is, you know, this is not Juan Soto where like potentially, they could be playing, you know, him on the Mets for, you know, in years that count. Like Josh Bell is a rental, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So like, I don't know, if the Nats wouldn't in division trade Josh Bell, then like bless, they need the help more than we do.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're so bad, like they should just take whatever they could get for anybody.
Really awfully bad.
Yeah,
I do just wonder though, like, because I don't think, you know, the Mets are not going to be the only suitors for Josh Bell. I just wonder, I don't think that they're unwilling to trade him in division. That would be silly. I just wonder if like they're going to, if there's two equivalent packages on the table and one is the Mets and one is some other team, if they're going to go with some other team so that he's not in the division. But he doesn't, it's not, again, like Maggie said, it's not Juan Soto, and he doesn't have like the sentimental value to the franchise that Juan Soto has. It's not like, it's like, oh, like this perennial National Josh Bell is now on the opposition. I'm not sure they care about that, but maybe Mike Rizzo does. I don't know.
Well, and they also did mention CJ Cron today, too.
it's an interesting fit too. That would be, you know, very similar to these other guys that we're talking about, a first base DH type. But that's what they need.
But you have to worry about Coors. I know it's overblown.
He was a good hitter before Coors.
Yeah, and like LeMahieu has been fine, and Arenado's been fine, but
a lot of the Coors effect is really that playing every day in Coors makes it hard to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that is like, yes. You know, Matt Holliday did not forget how to hit when he went to St. Louis.
Yeah. So
didn't he make the All-Star team too? Is he the Rockies representative?
CJ Cron, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. He's an All-Star, which I don't know. I guess like maybe ups his price like ever so slightly, because you know how like at least this was like a previous regime Mets thing, like how they always were like, we are acquiring all-star, you know, former all-star.
The Rockies front office is also a hot mess. Like they paid the Cardinals to take Arenado, so I feel like you can maybe get a deal with the Rockies.
The Rockies are the weirdest front office in baseball, and I don't understand anything that they do. So I really cannot, like, predicting their behavior is a fool's errand. I have no idea what the Rockies are ever thinking at any given time.
And I don't even know what they would even ask for. Like, where do you start when you're the Rockies? Like, pitching is always going to be a crapshoot. So I don't know. Like, would they want the Mets top prospects for Cron?
I don't know.
Wow.
Unclear.
Or could you get them for like a Mauricio?
I think that you could.
Yeah.
I think that you could. So less likely than a bat, like a first base DH type bat and bullpen help, is acquiring another starting pitcher. Although if this DeGrom stuff continues to go south, maybe then they do like pivot hard toward trying to get a starting pitcher. Possibilities there, include, Frankie Montas of the A's, Luis Castillo of the Reds, Tyler Molly also of the Reds, although he is unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood that the Mets acquire him is low. We know that because he was one of the players that went on the restricted list when they played the Blue Jays, along with half the Royals roster, which is something that like I don't even have time to get into, but that was nuts. 10 players. What a disgrace. But yeah, so the Mets might pivot towards starting pitching, but Montas and Castillo would be pretty expensive also in trade, I think, because they're very good pitchers.
Yeah, I would probably say if I had a choice, I would probably go Castillo.
Yeah.
But again, that's probably going to cost you more.
Yeah. But at least worth mentioning that that's something that's probably still on the table for the Mets potentially. One last person to mention, who is available in trade that until, you know, like 48 hours ago was not a factor in trade is, literally Juan Soto.
literally Juan Soto.
So in a completely unprecedented situation, the Nationals did not manage to lock Juan Soto down. He turned down a $440 million contract extension with the Nationals that would have lasted 15 years, which is, you know, obviously a very large contract, but it's pretty low on the average annual value. They went with like more years for less money.
It was under 30.
Yep.
Which is what they did with Scherzer too, right?
Yes. And while none of the money was deferred, which would have been a very Nationals move, a lot of it was like heavily, heavily backloaded. So Soto turned that contract down. And so therefore the Nationals sort of indicated that they're going to trade him now, which I can't this is a completely unprecedented situation. A player of this caliber, a superstar player of this caliber at age 23 has really never been available in trade. I mean, obviously there's been like, you know, the Mookie Betts trade and the Francisco Lindor trade with the like trade for a superstar and extend, but both of those players were older than Soto.
Significantly older.
Like there were prospects just drafted who are older than Juan Soto.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is like absolutely nuts. Obviously any package that would net Juan Soto has to be like the biggest blockbuster trade package of all time. I am not going to pretend to have the expertise to know like what package it would take. I know that it would take like, you know, people are talking about, oh, like Alvarez, Beatty, Mauricio, Vientos, like all those guys, all of them, not just like pick three, like all of the Mets, like top five or six prospects, plus other things lower in the system, like all of it. It takes all of it. Whatever you're thinking it takes two more guys.
you just keep adding people.
That's it.
But it also like, I mean, that's what makes it so insane from the national side is that all of that, and it's still not enough.
It's still not enough.
The actual enough price is truly a price that no one can pay.
No. Right. Like, this is a perennial MVP candidate.
Yes. Yes, it is. And if, and there are maybe, like, and, you know, like I said, I don't have the expertise to know that, like, the exact package that it would take, but I do have the level of expertise to be able to tell you that as far as like teams that have the prospects and teams that are like, it's a combination of two things to be a team that would be in contention to get Juan Soto. You have to have the package of prospects and you have to be willing to trade those prospects and you have to have the financial capital to potentially extend Soto after you trade for him. There are maybe 4-5 teams in baseball that meet those conditions. The Mets are one of them.
Well, then there was also talk of taking on like Corbin or Strasburg.
Yes, that's been discussed. I mean, not been discussed by teams. I don't know what teams are discussing, but that's been discussed amongst baseball media and the internet more broadly. Yeah, I mean, whatever it takes, the Mets should do it, period. I know that like I know that Francisco Alvarez is like a consensus, like top three prospect in baseball. I know that Mets value him very highly. I know that Mets fans value him very highly. I'm personally looking forward to seeing him as the Mets catcher of the future.
Juan Soto.
Yeah.
It is literally Juan Soto.
You can live with Tomas Nito if Juan Soto is in your lineup.
Soto will cover up a lot of Nitos.
Yeah. You do whatever it takes. You trade whoever they ask for, and then you pay Juan Soto however much money he wants to stay on the Mets for the rest of his career.
Like, your outfield would be Soto, Marte, and Nimmo, and Canna becomes your depth. Like,
yeah,
Canna's the depth guy, and Canna's fantastic.
He's really good.
Yeah. So, like, it completely changes the entire complexion of the entire team.
Yes, it really does. It changes everything. Like, obviously, you know, the Mets need a bat upgrade. This is like massive upgrade, makes them like instant World Series favorites, regardless of what is happening with DeGrom or anybody 60%
else. 60% shoots way up.
Yeah, way up instant. Mm-hmm. And it's the perfect fit for the roster in addition to everything else. I mean, regardless of whether Juan Soto is the right fit for he's the right fit for everyone's roster, but especially the Mets. You do whatever it takes. And, you know, it obviously the like amount of money it would take to extend him would send Steve Cohen like way past the Cohen tax. Who cares?
What's the point of having a tax named after you if you're not going to blow past it?
Yeah,
exactly. You pay whatever penalties it takes. You trade whatever prospects it takes. You do whatever it takes to get Juan Soto. This is like a once in a generation opportunity to get a player this good.
He's 23.
And he's so good.
Baby.
And he's so good.
He just won the home run derby.
Oh, and shout out to Marte and Diaz for tampering.
Oh yeah, for doing a recon on getting Juan Soto on the Mets,
being our sleeper agent,
being part of the Soto hype squad in the home run derby. Yes,
because they would also do anything thing to have Juan Soto on their baseball team.
Yes.
Well, there was, I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody did tweet that Soto and Marte are cousins.
Really?
Soto's father, are they cousins, or are they brothers cousins? With Marte's mom.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All I saw was the tweet about how they like grew up playing video games together. But I just thought that's because like they were, you know, they knew each other through like baseball things.
But like I said, I'm not 100% sure because like I said, it's a thing on Twitter. So yeah, it wasn't from a verified source. But
well, I mean, they like also cousin can mean a whole host of different things.
Yes, it can. They do go way back.
Specifics that Soto's father is the brother of Marte's mom. Oh,
well, that'll do it then.
They do go way back, regardless of whether the familial connection is actually true.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Leverage that.
So, yeah, I mean, literally Juan Soto. Holy crap. And I mean, obviously, we've kind of hinted at this, but the fact that even though like I am very excited about this from a Mets perspective, because like I hope that the Mets can get him, even if it's like unlikely, it's fun to hope for it. But it's worth noting that the fact that Soto is even available in trade is absolutely shameful on the part of the Washington Nationals. Like they should be ashamed of themselves. It's bad for baseball. And yeah, feel bad about it.
Well, especially after they didn't keep Harper and now they're doing this again.
It's about to be a dark era for baseball in the District of Columbia where I reside.
And it's I find it hilarious because I hate the Nats, but at the same time, like for baseball as a whole, this shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. It's I don't hate them enough for this.
It's about to be very easy to get Nationals tickets. It was already easy, but it's going to be like so cheap now. Ooh, for so many years. Ooh, it's going to be good for my wallet.
Yeah, anytime the Mets are in town, you probably just walk up and get tickets.
Yeah, I plan on doing that the first week of August. Plan on going to multiple of those games.
You'll still see Juan Soto, maybe.
I will, maybe. Well, the very fascinating thing is that the trading deadline occurs during the Mets Nats series.
Ooh, that is fun.
So the trading deadline is August 1st, 2nd, whatever it is. And the Mets and the Nationals will be playing each other. So we could see a hug watch live.
And then walk across the field.
literally to save on airfare, because you know they didn't that even give Juan Soto his own plane to the All-Star game. He had to fly like on his own to the All-Star. He had to take like a regular commercial airline.
Oh my God. There at, like, 2 a.m.
Yeah, he arrived at the Home Run Derby at 1:30, arrived in LA for the Home Run Derby 1:30 in the morning, the night before / the morning of, and still won the guy.
Literally. Juan Soto.
The Nationals didn't even charter him a plane. So I have a feeling if they trade him or Josh Bell, they won't bother to charter them a plane to their next place of destination either. So maybe they'll just be like, oh, we'll trade you the Mets. They're right across the way. You can just like walk over to their clubhouse. Save a ton of money.
That's in their favor. Nobody else does it. They're playing them at the deadline.
Yeah.
What if the Mets say, we'll give you 5 prospects, but 2 of them we'll give you in 7 years?
Deferred prospects. Player to be named much later.
Although I saw one angry Nationals fan tweeting, well, if you trade Soto, it's going to cost you Scherzer and DeGrom, which that's a horrible trade for you Nationals. But
no, it's not.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Would that mean the Nationals are paying Scherzer twice, their original contract and then the Mets contract?
Oh, yeah.
The whole point of doing that is to not like take on money that there's no, it's not going to cost DeGrom and Scherzer.
No, you do not want DeGrom and Scherzer, because then DeGrom's opting out and you have nothing and you're paying Scherzer twice.
Right. No. And people like I've been, you know, because this news has happened and Mets fans are, and other fans too, are understandably very excited and instantly want to put together their own trade packages. We are going to be seeing ridiculous trade packages for the next, you know, however long. I am not going to participate in that discourse because I am self-aware enough to know I'm not smart enough to put together an accurate trade package. But I am smart enough to laugh at other people's trade packages that they put together, one of which included Jeff McNeil in it. And I'm just like, you fundamentally misunderstand the Nationals' angle here. If you think that they are going to, if you think they want Jeff McNeil, I understand that Jeff McNeil is cheap, but he's like almost a free agent. That's not the type of dudes the Mets are trading. The Nats are trading Juan Soto for. Come on, guys.
What if we were just as bad? What if we were worse now, but didn't get better later? It's basically what they're going for.
Yeah. Like these, the Nationals are looking for top prospects or like dudes who are in the major leagues, but are young and very good and very far from free agency. Think Julio Rodriguez, like those type of dudes. That's what the Nationals are looking for.
I mean, I think this just highlights why it's going to be so hard to find anybody, but like Pete Alonso is going to be the kind of guy that they're looking for.
Yeah, maybe like Pete Alonso might even be too close to free agency. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso like a year ago.
Why it's always also like going to be hard to find, because anybody with the kind of player who can get Juan Soto also really wants to have that kind of player that can get Juan Soto.
Right. Like, you know, that like again, Julio Rodriguez is the type of player that would be the cornerstone of a theoretical deal for Juan Soto, but are the Mariners also in sort of a rebuilding situation going to trade Julio Rodriguez for Juan Soto? No, they're not. So it goes into, again, the very specific conditions need to be met. They have to have the package of players that would be right for the deal, which not every team has, but they also have to be at a stage of their contention cycle, meaning the team is built to win now, that wants to trade that package, and has to be a team that has the financial wherewithal to potentially extend. So again, that's like the Mets, the Yankees, maybe the Dodgers, maybe the Padres, maybe the Cardinals. There's like three or four teams that are realistic here.
Well, the Nationals hold all the cards.
They do. And they don't have to trade him at all.
Yeah, they might not trade him at all. They still have him for another couple of years.
I think the likelihood that he gets dealt like at this deadline is like 50-50, maybe even a little lower than that. I think the likelihood that he gets dealt in the off season is pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you might have more teams interested in the off season that you wouldn't now.
Yeah.
Because then you have more players becoming free agents and money getting off the books. So I don't know. It'll be an intriguing next couple weeks, and probably endless speculation.
It will be very fun. So this has been, in addition to the Juan Soto like bomb, this has been like a very like news heavy week in baseball. There's been a few like league wide developments, even just in the past like 24 hours. Especially with the like media availability around the All-Star game. So like Rob Manfred talked to the media today, and every time Rob Manfred talks to the media, he says something incredibly stupid, and this was no exception. So he was asked by one reporter asked Manfred, I think it was Hannah Kaiser actually asked Manfred if team owners can't afford to pay minor leaguers a living wage or simply prefer not to. And Manfred had an issue with the framing of that question and said, quote, I kind of reject the premise of the question that minor leaguers are not paid a living wage. Oh, okay.
When they literally just had to settle a lawsuit about minor leaguers not being paid.
Well, it's a shame there's no objective measure of a living wage that one could compare against what minor league baseball players make. Because certainly if one did, one would be shocked at the enormous gap in between what minor league baseball players make and a living wage.
Yep. And this quote immediately prompted the advocates for minor leaguers to release a statement which says, quote, most minor league baseball players work second jobs because their annual salaries are insufficient to make ends meet. The commissioner makes an annual salary of $17.5 million. His suggestion that minor league pay is acceptable is both callous and false.
Preach. Boom.
So yeah, Rob Manfred rejects the premise that minor league players don't make a living wage, which is laughable.
And he makes what, like $10 million a year?
$17.5 million. They just said that in the statement.
Oh,
my God. Imagine what they would have to pay for a commissioner who knew how to play baseball.
Anyway, very frustrating. But another interesting tidbit that came out of Rob Manfred talking to the media is friend of the pod, Bradford William Davis, had a chat with Rob Manfred about the baseballs. And there was some pretty revelatory stuff that he said. He said, you know, first of all, he said, yes, the league used two balls, one dead ball and a different juiced ball, which is something that, you know, we've already discussed in great depth with Bradford and Meredith before. Manfred claimed it was because of like COVID supply chain issues. So they had to use older balls, the juiced ones, to make up for that inventory. And, you know, he said to Bradford, we made it public eventually that they used two balls. And Bradford is pointing out in his Twitter thread about this, that like, yeah, of course you made it public after we wrote this article about it. but you know, so then they got into the subject of Meredith's latest research, which involved obtaining balls throughout the 2021 season, which showed that Major League Baseball continued to manufacture the older juiced ball. It wasn't just that they were using two baseballs and they were reaching back into the old supply of juiced balls to make up for the inventory. It's that they kept making the juiced ball. And Meredith knew this because the dates are printed on the ball. She showed it to us during the podcast. You can see it.
Which is something that Rob Manfred didn't seem to know.
No. He didn't seem to understand that Bradford said it to him.
He probably should have known that.
He would think, as a commissioner.
Right.
With all these conversations, like, it was a conversation happening last year. Like, they made a big deal out of not agreeing with any of it, then quietly agreed with it. They knew that this was a topic. How do you not know that there's a date on the inside of a fucking ball?
Right. So Manfred said, when Bradford brought this up, when Bradford brought up Meredith's research in the article that Bradford wrote about Meredith's research, Rob Manfred said the researchers are not right. Okay, I mean, it changed the manufacturing process at one point. The baseballs that were produced in 2020 for 2021 were produced under one system. There were 2020 balls that were out there. I just said that. So they would find some from the old process, some from the new. But once we switched to the new process, they were all produced under the new process, which Meredith's research directly contradicts what he's saying here. But he's saying Meredith is wrong, basically, even though the dates are printed on the balls, which is nuts. So he just seems to like not be understanding that. And Bradford goes on to say, so if that's the case, Manfred denounced Wills' method of determining when balls were manufactured, which is interesting because Major League Baseball never contested the method in our article when it was published or in Stephanie Apstein's Sports Illustrated article about this. So at the time the articles came out, they never disputed the process of like determining when the balls were manufactured. This is a brand new issue that Manfred's bringing up. He's claiming that like that's wrong, determining when the balls were manufactured, like that's inaccurate, but they never said that when the article came out. So, but then of course, Bradford followed up and said, when I asked where I could go and ask more detailed information on why the league rejects Dr. Wills's research, Manfred said, quote, honestly, I can't help you on that one either. So he doesn't like, he's saying that Meredith's wrong, but he's not providing any evidence to contradict her.
He's making himself look stupid too. Like he had no information. Like you're the commissioner of Major League Baseball and you don't know anything about the baseballs.
Yep. I don't know.
Like either you're the dumbest person in alive or you're lying.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basically.
How about that?
Yep. More or less. So that was interesting. So Rob Manfred, not only thinks that minor leaguers make a living wage and it's totally fine, he also, you know, can't contradict Meredith Wills's research about the two baseballs and when they were manufactured, but still insists it's wrong anyway. Anyway.
Well, they're just going to keep Meredith busy forever, it seems.
Yes, they are.
Regular reminder to send Meredith your baseballs.
Yep.
Send Meredith your derby balls. She wants those.
Yeah. Send her your baseballs. If you do, we will give you free stuff.
Yeah, yes. Really well.
We will give you free stuff. So I guess the only thing really left on the docket for this week is All-Star Game reactions and Home Run Derby chatter. So we talked about Juan Soto, you know, coming in like a king at 1:30 a.m. and then waking up the next day and winning the Home Run Derby. Sadly, that came at the expense of Pete Alonso, who did not three-peat his Home Run Derby crown.
He did not. It was no. and then he didn't actually make it to the finals. It was Julio Rodriguez, who had an awesome round. And I think I always love when Pete wins anything and is generally happy, but I also feel like his genuine love of the Derby was just on full display and is infectious for everyone. And I don't know how anyone, Mets fan or otherwise, can't be super happy with how that went.
Yeah,
I really don't understand all the hate Pete gets. Our poor darling Pete. He's just a goof who loves baseball.
Yeah.
He's a happy golden retriever, an excitable golden retriever who just wants to mash baseballs. How can anybody fault that?
I think people like, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about the stupid Padres fans because they are different level of pathology when it comes to Pete Alonso.
And the Braves fans too.
Which is super weird because the fact that Pete Alonso lives rent-free in the heads of Padres fans when Chris Paddock is no longer in their organization is like wild to me. So we won't talk about them because they have like a weird, like
they've got bigger
complex.
They've got bigger complex issues going on here. As far as like general, like fan bases of other teams like disliking Alonso for some reason and seem to like invent reasons to not like him, it's like super weird, but I think that they like mistake his jock like personality as like aggressive or something. I don't really get it. I don't know.
He doesn't come across as aggressive.
No, but they just like make fun of his like himbo, like deadlifts to warm up for the Derby. And I don't think they understand that he literally is just like no thoughts, just vibes. Like,
yeah. Yes.
He's not well, doing
part
it to
of
like.
It is also the thought of like, oh, you know, I really want to win the Home Run Derby as being like a like uber competitive, like I will fight you to win the Home Run Derby. It's like, no, he really wants to win the Home Run Derby because it's awesome, man.
And he was playing for charity.
Yeah. He's done that every year. He's played for charity. He donated his winnings before he made $1 million in 2019.
I will say, like, I've heard plenty of fans complain about him. I don't know that I've ever heard any person who has had actual interaction with Pete Alonso ever have anything negative to say about him.
No, he's just a good dude. That's why I get so upset. Like, he doesn't deserve this. He's not an awful person like that person who compared him to Trevor Bauer.
I was not going to dignify Whoa. That tweet with time on this podcast, but since you brought it up, that did happen. And that tweet was deleted because people dragged that person so hard.
Because it was the dumbest things.
That's enraging. Like, there's annoying about Pete Alonso, and then there's like stuff that's like flat out enraging and offensive, which is making a comparison to between him and a domestic abuser. Like, that's messed up, and you should really reevaluate yourself.
Yeah, and evaluate your perspective as a fan too. Like,
it was a Yankees fan because of
course. Yeah, so does he have no problems with Chapman on his team? Probably.
I don't know.
He probably cheers for Chapman.
Yeah.
He has "women deserve their rights" in his bio, which is the funniest part. But yeah, that was next level.
And
but
like Meredith, like I've tweeted something like, you know, everybody's like, oh, there needs to be more fun in baseball. And the Derby's supposed to be fun. Pete embraces it. And then everybody's like, no, fuck that guy. It's like, why would you rather him not embrace the Home Run Derby? And Meredith was like, I find his enthusiasm infectious.
Yeah, it's very like he's very fun. And he's possibly like one of the most inoffensive players in baseball. And I just don't understand the weird. It's because he's good and like plays in New York. That's like the whole That's
but he was, even when he was on bad teams, people, maybe it was just mostly the Padres.
Big bad New York, though. Like other fan bases don't really, I mean, I think they do a little bit, but other fan bases don't really distinguish between the Mets and the Yankees the way that we do. Like, they just see New York as like this.
Like, and I feel like Yankees fans have their hang up because he beat Judge's record too.
Yeah, they're like weird.
That's
about
the thing,
that.
Definitely.
Yeah, even though Judge was rooting for him.
Yep.
Who wouldn't be?
Yeah.
Awesome. Everybody wins.
I was going to say, Judge doesn't even enter. Stanton doesn't even enter. Some of the biggest home run hitters don't even enter. And here's somebody who is a big, beefy, like, who, he's the epitome of the home run derby, who loves it and embraces it and wants to compete in it. And everybody's like, no, hate him.
Yeah. Annoying. But anyway, Danielle, friend of the pod, Danielle, said it best. Pete Alonso did not survive a horrific car crash and pen an eloquent, thoughtful essay about dealing with PTSD just for you basement dwelling mouth breathers to get on here and whine that he cares too much about playing well.
Exactly. Mm. And also, Pete, fix your donation button on your website so we can donate, so we can turn this into a positive thing.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, even though Pete Alonso didn't win the home run derby and didn't three-peat, it was still a very fun home run derby. Juan Soto, great home run derby winner. Julio Rodriguez, super fun to watch. That was like very fun. So I'm not mad about it.
I'm judging a little bit that, you know, Pete didn't have a problem having big rounds and finishing in past years. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
Although David Wright also ran into that issue
though. Oh boy. Cue the discourse if Pete Alonso goes into any sort of slump out of the break. Home run derby ruined him.
Oh, he was already in a slump entering the break, though.
He was.
He was doing really bad.
Speaking of Rodriguez, he is currently batting as we speak. The American League has taken the lead over the National League in the sixth inning, 3-2. The American League, I think, in the fourth, hit back-to-back homers. Giancarlo Stanton and Byron Buxton hit back-to-back homers. So now the AL is up 3-2 as they bat in the top of the sixth. And Jeff McNeil has already had two at-bats, which is very fun. He got hit by a pitch, cue the buck cam. And then I think he grounded out in his other at-bat. So I don't know if he's, I don't even know if he's still in the game. I've been trying to like check in on my stream, but I confess I've not been paying.
Well, the National League needs to tie it because then they're going to a derby to determine who wins.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's a new thing where, like, if it's tied, instead of extra innings, they're going to do a home run derby. And so I desperately want that to happen. That would be
awesome.
Yeah,
let's see who will be cheering Pete then.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, All-Star Game is fun.
Harbor and who's their third one? Because they pretty much are guaranteed to win if they do it.
I don't know who their third one is.
I forget. It was another masher. I can't remember who their third one was, but it was definitely Pete and Schwarber.
Yeah.
Be a tough team to beat on that.
I mean, the AL would just send up Judge and whoever, Rodriguez. Yeah, so the All-Star game is fun. The home run derby is fun. I enjoy these things. I like getting to watch them every year. I like getting to watch all these players that I don't get to see all that often play. And it's very fun. And it's cool that we have like a close game going here in the sixth. But before we move on to walk-off wins, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge everything that Kellyanne Healy has given to this show. She is leaving the podcast. Not for any like scary, terrible reason. She's just very overwhelmed with grad school and her fellowship, which is totally understandable. She's got a lot going on. And she came on the show to sub in for Maggie when Maggie was out for a while. And she did such a good job that we couldn't possibly kick her out when Maggie came back. So then we had the absolute pleasure of having Maggie and Kellyanne for a while. But now we are transitioning back to just being a three-person podcast again. But yeah, I just wanted to shout out Kellyanne and thank her for all of the work that she's done on this show. We are so deeply grateful for everything that she's contributed.
And yeah, good luck on her grad school studies going forward.
Yep.
I was so lucky to be able to leave my seat in good hands when I wasn't around, and I always really appreciated what Kellyanne did for us and stepping in and making herself a part of this show. And we will miss her, and hopefully you guys will have lots of opportunities to hear her on various occasions as time goes on.
Yeah, she absolutely is not gone forever. She just is not a permanent host anymore. She knows she has an open invitation to be on this show whenever she wants. So it is likely you will hear her voice again at some point. And, you know, when Dollars for Dingers comes around, she won't be a stranger. But yeah, she will not be a regular co-host moving forward. But thank you very much, Kellyanne. We will miss you. And we're excited to have you at some point in the future. So that does it for the show this week. Before we end the show, we will do walk off wins like we always do, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Cervich, what is your walk off win for this week?
My walk off win is I got to see the Backstreet Boys again. Yay. At Jones Beach, the last time I saw them was 2019, pre-pandemic, and that was the first time I saw them in concert. So I was always upset that I never saw them as a team. Like, I felt like that was like a quintessential thing you should have done growing up in the 90s, and I never did it. And so when they were going on tour again, we knew we had to see them in 2019, and then when I saw it, they were, you know, performing again, and it was the weekend of my sister's birthday, so it's like we had to do it. Her birthday was the 17th, and they were performing on the 16th, so that was her birthday gift. But it was just like hearing them again, I could just picture myself with my Discman playing their Millennium album on repeat every day going to high school on the school bus. You know, and they know why you're there. They sing all their every song you know, they sing. And they still have their little dance moves down and their coordination. And it's like, Kevin's 50.
I'm glad to hear they're still like highly limber and mobile. I would be worried.
They are. Oh my God. They totally, like, they haven't missed a beat. But then I was like, I'm sore the next day. How are they moving? Like, I was just sore from standing up the entire concert. But I didn't appreciate that they said multiple times, we've been together 30 years.
Oh, like, that's a lot of years.
Yeah, I was like, can we please
stop? I don't know how that math works.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
I'm like, you don't need to keep bringing this up. You really don't. We can just forget that happened. But I've never been to Jones Beach, and it's actually a really nice venue. But the stage is literally on the water. I don't know if it's in the ocean or in the bay. But it's, yeah, you're on the water, so you're looking out at the water. And then they have like a lot of different food and like drinks and like a little picnic area outside before you enter in. And so it was a really nice night too. It was a little muggy, and I felt bad for the guys because they were clearly sweating. And then Nick was wearing a jacket. I'm like, Nick, take it off, man. What are you doing? But overall, I mean, they put on a good show. If you ever have a chance to go see the Backstreet Boys, it's a fun night. Because they really do still bring the energy. And it's like, yeah, like I was in my element, like reliving my glory days. But yeah, I'm a BSB girl for life. And if anytime they go on tour, I'll go see them because I'm that person.
Amazing. We love a good nostalgia. We love some good throwbacks. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So this Sunday was the thrice scheduled, long-awaited wedding of my friend Rosie, who her original wedding date was for the middle of 2020. And then her rescheduled wedding date was for October of 2021. And this Sunday, she got married And we were so happy. She had waited so long and put so much work into it. I say we, and I do mean me and the other people who were there, which included none of my family, because I got COVID a month ago and they all got COVID last week. So I had to take the hit. I had to really like shoulder the burden of putting on my best dress and putting way too much time into my hair and makeup and hitting the town, looking excellent and talking to a whole bunch of grownups for as long as I wanted with no children anywhere. I took the hit and I did that on behalf of my family who is home with COVID. But everyone's fine, by the way. This story would not be as like tongue in cheek if any of them were like symptomatic, but yeah, so it was a lovely wedding. It was at this really nice Italian restaurant in the village called La Conta Verde, and I would definitely recommend it. The food was fantastic. And it was just lovely. It was a really great day. A plus.
That's awesome. I'm glad you had a good time, even if your family couldn't be with you.
Yeah. So sad.
So my walk-off win for this week is the fact that I went to Chicago last week. I was able to test negative. It was a close call because I got COVID like the week before the trip. But I tested negative the day before I was set to get on the flight. So I went and I had a great time. My family had a great time. We went to Wrigley and it was wonderful. We went to the game that the Mets won 8-0. So it turned out to be the best game in the series. We panic bought tickets. We originally had tickets for the Friday night game. And we panicked on Thursday night because there was rain in the forecast suddenly for Friday. And we were like, no, 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 we are not missing Wrigley. So we panic bought tickets for Thursday's game. And I'm really glad we did because the Mets won 8-0 and it was a fantastic game. And I really enjoyed Wrigley and I'm so glad that we got to see it. And then, it did run, it did rain on Friday and the game got rained out. And so I sold the tickets that we had for that game because it got rescheduled for Saturday after we were already flying home. Yep. And we got to go, we did a bunch of other stuff in Chicago. We got to go to the Field Museum, which was awesome. Highly recommend. Super great natural history museum. We went to the American Writers Museum, which Michael really enjoyed. And I really enjoyed as well. Really lovely museum. Super fun. We got to go on the architectural boat tour, which is, you know, the thing that everyone says you got to do when you go to Chicago. And they are not lying about it because it was fantastic. I got some of the best photos you could ever get of all the wonderful Chicago buildings and skyline. It was a fantastic trip. And I it was the first time I'd ever been to Chicago and I would definitely go back, but only in the summer.
I love Chicago. It's one of my favorite cities.
Yeah. I hear such good things about Chicago. I do want to go.
If it wasn't for the winter, I would live there. I say that about Vermont too.
That is my exact feeling about Chicago.
Yeah.
But also, anybody who's heading over there from this area, if they have the time for it, should definitely, definitely do the Amtrak Lakeshore Limited line to get out there, do a nice overnight train ride. It is lovely. Great way to get to Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago, awesome city. Would go back. Didn't enjoy the deep dish. Not going to lie. But every other meal I had there, A+.
How is Wrigley?
Awesome.
Yeah, lives up to it.
Oh yeah, 100%. Instant top three ballpark for me. So good. Loved it.
Like, even though it's old, does it still like
I will be the dissenter. I did not care for Wrigley, I'll be honest.
I loved it. I liked it more than Fenway.
I haven't been to Fenway.
Fenway was like a hype letdown for me, whereas Wrigley was not, but yeah. Agree to disagree on it. I liked it a lot.
I just needed to be totally honest about.
No, it's totally fair. Different strokes for different folks. I loved it. It's probably my third favorite ballpark that I've been to, with number one being Camden Yards and number two being PNC Park.
Yeah, PNC is so hard to compete with.
Yeah, I don't think it tops that one. But for me, it's a solid number three of the ballparks I've been to. I have a small, like, lesser second walk-off win. Which is that I want to shout out Apple TV Plus for sending me a fantastic gift, which was so cool. I got back from Chicago to a package that I was not expecting. And I was like, what's this? And I opened it up and it was a monogrammed baseball mitt and a personalized baseball from Apple TV Plus, which is awesome. I got a DM from, you know, the head of SB Nation podcasts a while back. Saying, you know, hey, Apple TV is giving out some swag to some of the podcast hosts of the team sites. Do you want some swag? And I was like, sure, why not? And I gave him like my mailing address and stuff and promptly completely forgot about the whole conversation because it happened back in like May. And suddenly, you know, now it's July and I returned from this trip and I have free swag and it's like way cooler swag than I ever could have imagined. So yeah, shout out to Apple TV Plus. Thank you so much for the glove. I actually like don't have a baseball glove. I did have a baseball glove at one time when I was younger, for like the very brief period of my life when I played softball. We don't speak of those times, because I was very bad at it. And I did have a glove and I don't know whatever happened to it. I think it might have gotten lost in my parents' recent flood that they had of their basement. So I actually don't have a baseball glove and now I do. And I'm really happy about it. It has my name on it. So thanks, Apple
TV. Everyone knows it's yours.
It's really cool.
So that does it for the show this week.
But we do have a little bit of breaking, sad, kind of sad breaking news.
Oh no.
What's that? They did the Stand Up to Cancer segment and both Manny Machado and Pete Alonso wrote Wayne Kirby.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it seems their first base coach is cancer.
That is sad. That is very sad. I didn't
know that. Yeah.
Well, best of luck to Wayne Kirby.
Yeah. Like, oh no, poor Wayne Kirby.
Didn't they say that he was like getting surgery?
Yeah, and he was going to miss some time, I think, after the All-Star break.
So yeah, but they didn't say what kind of surgery. Well, clearly that is why.
Hopefully that. Yeah. Well, get well soon, Wayne.
Yeah. Best of luck to Wayne Kirby. Definitely in our thoughts. Hopefully he recovers well from the surgery. So best of luck to him. Hopefully he's back with the Mets soon. But yeah, otherwise, that does it for this very news heavy news laden show this week. You can find game recaps, morning news posts all over at AmazingAvenue.com. Right now we have tons and tons of coverage of the draft. So if you want to find all that stuff, which, you know, this is not the right podcast to talk about the draft, which is something we didn't even touch that happened this week. But the draft did happen. And you can follow all of our minor league teams coverage of the draft. They do a fantastic job. Listen to From Complex to Queens, read all their stuff over at AmazingAvenue.com. They've got bios of all the Mets draft picks, analysis, everything you could ask for about the draft. So go to AmazingAvenue.com for that and everything else we always do. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Yep. So follow the show on Twitter, follow each of us on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.